Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for December 9th, 2012. I'm your host, David McLaughlin, and joining me as each and every week, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, a big show this evening. In about 10 minutes, we're going to have Tom Jensen on, the first time we've had him on since the election. But, of course, he's been busy polling. He's done national polling to kind of explain certain, you know, reasons why things may have turned out like they did and some repercussions afterward. Also, he started polling for some 2013 and 2014 races, including a big poll he did in Georgia, and we're going to have him on to discuss all that. But in the meantime, let's discuss what is basically the rage of the week, quitting. Folks would win election, re-election, still have 2-4 years on their term, and they say, hey, I'm calling it quits. And I guess the biggie would be Jim DeMint, who is like the philosophical head of the Tea Party and conservative movement in America. He said, hey, Nikki Haley, you can replace me for the next 4 years, and you know, maybe longer I'll be at the Heritage Foundation. At least that's what he's told us. Tim, what do you make of this?
Well, a lot of the talk has been focused on not why he just quit, but what Governor Haley's going to do. There's considerable pressure on her, as y'all heard, to appoint perhaps Representative Tim Scott by the more conservative Tea Party folks who really like this guy. And by the way, he would become the only African American in the Senate if she did appoint him. There are some other names out there like Joe Uli Wilson, you know, and a few others. And she could also pick someone as a placeholder who would just hold the seat, because at the next general election in 2014, whoever she appoints is going to have to run or something, but this seat is up again. And at the same time, well, there's Lindsey Graham. He also has to run, and he was bracing himself to be challenged by several Republicans. But now, with this other seat just hanging out there, possibly available as an open seat, Graham might just get lucky. Now, as to why DeMint quit, I think I'm going to give Catherine a shot at that, because I'm not exactly sure.
Well, I heard that Jim DeMint has, among the things that he's always wanted, was to be head of the Heritage Foundation, more than anything else. And apparently they made him an offer that he couldn't refuse, and so that's what they were saying on, I can't remember if it was Rush or Eric, one of them, Eric Erickson or Rush Limbaugh, was saying it on WSB this week. So I think that, you know, he said in his statement that he was not leaving the movement, but he would have more impact as head of the Heritage Foundation. I think David has some further comments on that I probably agree with, if you want to go on about that,
yeah.
David.
Yeah, sorry if you lost me for a second. I may have inadvertently hung up the phone with my cheek, and I apologize if that created a break in the show. But that's the nature of iPhones or any touch screen phone. But I really think that Jim DeMint is trying to get out of the Senate, so therefore he won't have to vote on budget deals and fiscal cliffs and anything where he might even have to be in sight of the political center, because he wants to be such a true Tea Partier that when he runs for president in 2016, he'll be just so ideologically pure that he can just bash any other candidate over the head with this. And this guy, you know, a lot of folks owe him a lot of favors because he helped elect him. Of course, South Carolina, he essentially takes that key battleground state off the table. I would think he would do quite well in Iowa. I don't know so much about New Hampshire. But I believe he would run and be one of the front runners for the Republican nomination. Tim, Catherine, do y'all think that he's looking to run for this, you know, the national presidency by getting out of the Senate?
Tim?
I'm thinking, you know, he's not going to say no way. But, you know, in looking at, well, our public policies polling, I won't give, you know, go deep into because we're going to be talking to the man himself about it in a minute. But there's no clear favorite there amongst Republicans right now. So, you know, the door could be open, but I would have to think, David, that running from the bully pulpit of a U.S. Senate seat would be a lot better than running as, you know, the head of the Heritage Foundation.
I think David makes a good point that if he's, especially with this, I mean, it sounds a lot, I'm sure we'll talk about this later too, it sounds a lot like there's going to be some serious negotiation on this fiscal cliff, as they call it, and he might be afraid of those votes coming up, you know, in 2016 if he decides to run for president. He's got a, you know, good conservative background already, so he can, you know, he can still pull, go back, he can still, you know, go back on that, and he's still got that in his, you know, arsenal, but being head of the Heritage Foundation gives him a more national visibility, maybe, if they have enough money and if they have issues to push, so I think that's probably a good suggestion. However, maybe he just wants to be head of the Heritage Foundation. Who knows? I mean, I'm sure it's a lot of money, and it's, you know, it's not as much pressure as, you know, being a senator or Lord knows being the president.
And you're a power player still in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But that's as far, I think, as the Heritage Foundation goes. And the reason I think that is I could go out on the street and just stop people and ask them, who's Ed Fellner?
Well, yeah, that's true.
I bet I wouldn't find a soul that would know who he was. Not a soul. And he's the head of the Heritage Foundation, you know, so what do you think?
Well, you put it in context, so that made it kind of easy to know he was, I will admit. But you look at this, he could probably take his past background in the Congress and in the U.S. Senate, and then take this post on a position where he could then get on network TV, you know, Meet the Press, you know, Fox News Sunday, whatever it may be, and still stay very much in the public eye. He could then go out on the rubber chicken circuit in some of these places where you can meet the people that are actually voting in some of the caucuses and whatnot. So there could be a plan here. I mean, it could be that the Heritage Foundation practically opens at a Des Moines, Iowa branch in the next 4 years just so their leader can float all around to these counties, if you will. Because, I mean, honestly, if he could win Iowa, takes South Carolina off the, you know, table because, you know, oh, and you have a favorite son, the results don't mean anything. That gives him two of the first three. It just really locks down a lot of power for him. Obviously, probably does pretty good, given that he's from the South on Super Tuesday in whatever configuration it may exist in 2016, because, of course, these mega primary dates are ever-changing from, you know, cycle to cycle. It's something to watch. I think there's more to it, obviously, than just I got tired of being in the Senate. I mean,
well, there's always more to it, but,
yeah.
You know,
even though it is South Carolina politics, and, of course, you could even have mistresses in South America, I don't think it's going to be that interesting to y'all.
Yeah. He had, by the way, pledged to retire from the Senate at the end of this term.
You mean DeMint?
I don't know. I don't know if that has anything to do with anything. I don't know.
I mean, of course, that class of 94, they all came with their own term limit pledges, and some of them are probably, breaking by a decade at this point. So those are kind of meaningless numbers, if you will. Well, like you said, there's much more to discuss on this with the fact that who Nikki Haley will appoint, will she appoint herself. We'll have to pick that discussion up later. Also, there's more quitters, of course, in the Georgia State Senate, a pair of them who just re-election. But we'll have to discuss that later on, too, because right now we've got our featured guest on the line. Welcome back from Public Policy Polling, Mr. Tom Jensen.
Hey, y'all. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, good to have you back. Of course, Tom, we saw that you did a good poll and wanted to have you on. But you also did some really interesting national polling, and it makes sense to talk about that first, then talk about Georgia, maybe some other southern stuff. And the most fascinating number that you had me poll in the last few weeks, I really admire your creativity for coming up with this question, is you ask Republican voters if they believe that Acorn helped Barack Obama steal the 2012 election. And, of course, I think it's preposterous because I don't think Acorn, even if they existed, could do this. But, of course, the key thing is they went out of business 2 years ago. They're probably not that good that they can steal elections and not exist like some kind of ghost. Tom, how did that question come about? And tell us more about that answer.
Sure. Well, sort of the genesis of that question was that after the 2008 election, you really did hear a lot of Republicans claiming that Acorn stole the election, especially on some of the fringier right-wing blogs and that kind of thing. So we asked after the 2008 election, do you think that Acorn stole the election for President Obama? And at that time, 52% of Republicans said yes, they thought Acorn stole the election. So what we were interested in doing with the poll this time around is 4 years later, Acorn doesn't exist anymore. Are Republicans still going to be claiming that Acorn stole the election? And, of course, what we found on this poll was that 49% of Republican voters still said they thought that Acorn stole the election even after it doesn't exist anymore. And the reaction to that poll among conservatives has been kind of interesting. Some people have said, you're just mocking conservatives by asking about this organization that doesn't exist anymore. They're kind of offended by the question. But we've had other people come back to us and say Acorn does still exist, and it did steal the election. It's just doing it under different names, and they just claim to go out of business, to sort of try to lessen the scrutiny on them, but they really are still out there doing this evil stuff. So it's kind of an interesting mixture of reactions to the poll.
Yeah, it sounds like you need to hand over that from a polling firm to like 60 Minutes or 2020 to do some investigative journalism. If they're that stealthy and what have you. Well, of course, there's other national questions we ask, and to be efficient, I'm going to go ahead and hand this thing off to Catherine, then Tim, and then it can come back and we can continue to ask other questions. Catherine?
Sure. Well, thanks for being on with us tonight, Tom. I was fascinated by the Democratic presidential options in 2016. I'm so glad that everyone still loves Hillary Clinton because I think she's doing a great job. And I honestly don't have a sense of whether she's going to run or not. But anyway, what made you select? Are these the people that you think are the most likely to run, or are they the most popular Democrats in the country? Like, how do you select these?
It's really just sort of a preliminary list of who we sort of see as the people most likely to run. And as some of these folks sort of explicitly rule out running, we'll take them off the board. And then as other folks start to show more interest in running, we'll put them on the board. One change I think that we'll probably make sometime in the near future, it seems like Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York is kind of interested in running for president. So we may put her on and, for instance, take an Elizabeth Warren off, who, even though Elizabeth Warren actually has a decent amount of support, You know, she's been kind of emphatic that she's not going to be running for president at least that soon. So it's really just, I would think of it very much as a preliminary sort of list that as we move towards 2016 will certainly be refined a lot and become something that's, you know, more reflective of the actual candidate pool. Right now, it's just sort of a fantasy candidate list.
And on the presidential side, it's, I guess, you know, nobody really likes any of them, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Or on the Republican side, I mean.
Yeah, definitely a very split Republican field. A lot of folks picking up a pretty decent amount of support, but nobody really getting too much. It's going to be pretty fascinating if Hillary Clinton does run and just sort of waltz to the Democratic nomination to see the contrast on the Republican side, where I think that you can pretty much expect a primary that's just as divisive as this year's primary was, if not even more divisive. I think that in 2016, you're going to have a lot more qualified Republican candidates running than really did this time around. And I think what that means is you could have a pretty protracted nomination battle. You know, Romney really effectively had it wrapped up by about late February, early March this time around. I think in 2016, with so many strong potential candidates, at least people who are very strong with the Republican base, not necessarily the general electorate, it really could drag on a long time. I think it's going to be a fun race.
Well, it'll be an interesting race on both sides. You know, even if Hillary does, if Secretary Clinton does, you know, decide to run and, you know, clears the field, so to speak, once we get into a general, it will be very interesting, especially after two terms of President Obama. Okay, I'm gonna pass this over to Tim now, because I'm sure he has some more questions, too. Thank you.
Sure.
Good evening, Tom. How are you doing in the great state of North Carolina tonight?
I'm great. I'm driving back from seeing my Panthers beat y'all's Falcons, but, you know, you'll be playing in the playoffs while we're prepping for the draft, so that'll kind of work itself out in the long run.
But I tell you this, Tom, you got something special there at quarterback. I hope you really can surround that kid with a lot of talent so that his health will stay good for quite a number of entertaining years for you up there.
Absolutely.
Now, I think the most bizarre thing that has come out in any of your polls recently, you asked the question, who do you trust more as a result of the last election, Gallup or Nate Silver? And by 17 points, the respondents picked Gallup. What in the world were they thinking? Is this just name recognition or what is it?
Yeah, I think that Gallup has just been a trusted name for sort of ferreting out election results for over 60 years now. As incredible of a job as Nate Silver has done over the last 5 years, he's still only been around for 5 years, and I think it's just going to take a lot longer time before he really, you know, starts to become as well known with the American public as he is, and I guess as Gallup is. And I think the good news for Gallup there, Gallup has totally screwed up two elections in a row. Got the 2010 election totally wrong. Got the 2012 election totally wrong. And what we're seeing in these poll numbers is it's not having that much of an impact on their image. It's still just a situation where sort of just being around for decades and decades is the most trusted name in polling. They really are being able to coast on that, at least sort of with the broader public. I think that those of us political junkies who pay really close attention to these things, obviously Gallup's reputation has taken quite a hit over the last 2 years. But, you know, to Joe Public, I think it's going to take a few more election cycles of Nate Silver being awesome and Gallup being awful before that sort of starts to break through with average people.
Mm-hmm. And I just can't resist the urge tonight to ask you about your own state while I've got you on. The president won every battleground state except your home state Have you picked up anything in the polling to see why there was a swing of, I don't know, 106,000 votes and the president lost there?
Sure. It really just was a shift among independent voters from 2008 to 2012. Our final poll before the 2008 election found Obama winning independents in North Carolina by about 10 points. This time he lost independents in North Carolina by about 10 points. So all of his key demographic groups, African Americans, young voters, Hispanic voters becoming increasingly powerful in the North Carolina electorate, those folks all turned out very strong. They voted for President Obama. But it was just a situation where enough unaffiliated shifted their support from 2008 to 2012 to at least swing this state. But North Carolina, second election in a row, second closest state in the country both times, I think that North Carolina is very much a swing state to stay. I think the days like 2004 where Democrats kind of gave up on the state in early September, that's not going to happen again anytime soon. The trends in our electorate in terms of which voter groups are growing, it is groups that are more favorable to Democratic candidates, and I think that North Carolina moving forward is really going to be up there with the Ohio's and Florida's and Virginia's of the world as the most closely contested states that we kind of spend the most time talking about and trying to figure out who's going to win.
Oh, well, that sounds good. And I'm going to throw it back to David right now, who I'm sure is going to jump into some questions about Georgia polling. David?
Yes, well, one question, kind of a segue, since you did ask about this in Georgia poll, but we can talk about it nationally, the secession movement. Now, Tom, the average Republican voter that I see and talk to, they're going to keep living in America. They understand that, you know, we Democrats won, they Republicans lost on a national level, and you fight another day. But obviously there's some people that want to secede. What is the polling show? Is there anything to this, not that a state is going to secede, but that a decent block of Republicans are going to become so disenchanted that they, you know, don't really function, I guess, as Americans for a while?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously we know that all over the country these petition secessions have gotten, or these secession petitions have gotten a lot of attention. A lot of people are signing these petitions saying that they want their states to secede because of Obama's reelection. And what we found is that nationally, 25% of Republicans want to secede from the country, or at least say they want to. That was an even stronger number in Georgia, where 42% of Republicans said they wanted to secede. I'm sort of skeptical that if secession was a real option, that these Republicans would really want to leave the country. But, you know, it is a situation where if they get asked on a poll, they say, yeah, I'm so mad Obama got reelected that I want to leave the country. So, you know, regardless of how real that sentiment might be, if they, like, actually really had that option, I think it is at least a measure of just how frustrated a lot of people are that Obama won again.
Yeah, and I guess, of course, for Republicans, where do they go? You know, of course, they claim that the walls aren't very good between here and Mexico, but I don't see them testing how high they are to go the other way. And, of course, if they go to Canada, they have, of course, have something. They have, like, Obamacare on steroids and gun control and everything else they have. So,
if they're talking about secession, that means they want their state to leave the United States. It's
That's
not
true,
just that they want to leave the country. They want to stay where they are, but they want to be, you know, become unaffiliated with the country, with the United States.
I think they want Nathan Deal to be the president of Georgia or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because the Articles of Confederation works so well. Well, let's move into Georgia first, and then we'll probably more detail. Then we might get to something else if there's time. But in Georgia, now this is something that the three of us living in Georgia did see, talking to Republicans and other things. Saxby Chambliss is not popular in his party. Now, you gave us real numbers showing this. When you tested candidates, what are you seeing that makes him that is the most vulnerable about Saxby Chambliss?
Well, it was interesting. You know, folks just generally want somebody more conservative than Saxby Chambliss. We found that by a 5-point margin if folks had a choice between Chambliss and somebody more conservative in the primary. They'd pick somebody more conservative. What's interesting is that most of these names who have been mentioned as potential candidates against Chambliss aren't very well known yet at this point. So when you test a Paul Brown or a Tom Price or a Karen Handel, Chambliss has a big lead over all those folks at this point. But if you look at some of the high-profile sort of insurgent Republican primary candidacies over the last 2 years where, for instance, Richard Murdoch beat Dick Lugar in Indiana or Christine O'Donnell beat Mike Castle in Delaware, those folks started out well behind as well. So just because Chambliss has a big lead over them at this point does not mean that he's not highly vulnerable. But what we did find at this point is a Republican who would have the easiest chance at picking off Saxby Chambliss is Herman Cain, who would start out with a double-digit lead over Senator Chambliss.
Yeah,
and of course,
and I
Herman,
saw that. And go ahead about Herman
Cain. Yeah, and of course, he said he's not going to run at this point, but you never know if you see a poll like that that shows that you would really start out as the front runner, as was the case with Herman Cain, if that might get him to give it a second thought.
Yes, and so I find that a little surprising in that Herman Cain may have name recognition from his presidential campaign, but at the same time, he has the baggage of the affair with Ginger Brown, I want to say her name was, and then, of course, the fact that he didn't come off as the sharpest tool in the shed. Was there no negative baggage from the 2012 campaign?
He really had an amazingly high favorability rating with Georgia Republicans. About 70% saw Cain favorably. Only about 15% saw him unfavorably. And what that is really interesting because after all that stuff came out about all his extramarital affairs last December, we really saw his poll numbers, even with Republicans, go in the tank. He all of a sudden became far less popular than he had been before. But it's almost like with everything else that's happened politically in the last year, voters have just forgotten about all that bad stuff with Cain. You know, I wouldn't be surprised in the long run if Saxby Chambliss would love for his primary opponent to be Herman Cain because there's a whole lot there to attack him on. But at least for now, it seems like voters have kind of forgotten about a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I think Huey Long said that you can't be caught with a dead girl or a live boy. I don't think that's true anymore in the South. I think you just can't be caught being a Democrat in some of these races. That seems to be about the only role anymore. Well, talking about this race, then you also tested Democrats. And, of course, you had to kind of recycle some names from the past, and you had to look to the future. Kudos on getting Jason Carter in there, who's really an up-and-comer in this state. But what did it look like when you matched Democrats?
You know, Max Cleland would tie Chambliss in a rematch of their 2002 bid. Seems unlikely that would happen. And then most of the rest of the Democrats were down by pretty substantial margins. Chambliss really, even though he is not that popular with Republicans, has an unusual amount of crossover appeal to Democrats. We really found that a fair number of Democrats approve of the job that Chambliss is doing. So if he can get through to a general election and survive a Republican primary challenge, he's probably in pretty good shape for the general. I think you would probably see him do stronger than he did in his first reelection campaign in 2008. But we also just sort of, as a hypothetical, tested all the Democrats against Tom Price. If for instance, he was someone who was able to knock Chambliss off in the primary. And against Price, a lot of those Democrat versus Republican matchups are pretty close. I think against one of those sort of lower-tier, more conservative Republicans, you know, Democrats at least would have a chance to make it competitive. It's a situation that kind of reminds me of Indiana this year where Democrats knew they had no way of beating Dick Lugar, but they also knew there was a chance Lugar wasn't going to make it to the general election. So they got a pretty serviceable candidate to run, who didn't have a lot to lose politically, and it was sort of like, you know, it's a long shot, but, you know, if something crazy happens in the primary, you have a chance to win, and now we have from Indiana Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly. Everything went in his direction. So you wonder if somebody like maybe Jim Marshall, who got put out in the last election might say, you know, I got nothing to lose running for the Senate, so let me just run and see what happens. And, you know, it's not impossible in a state like Georgia. Donnelly won in Indiana, and Obama did even worse in Indiana than he did in Georgia. So obviously it's a situation where it's going to take sort of a special set of circumstances for a Democrat to win a Senate race in Georgia. But that set of circumstances could exist next, in 2014.
Yeah, I'm sure you didn't do it for this reason, but I wouldn't be surprised if the DSCC used this poll in some of their recruiting efforts. Well, of course, I can continue to ask you questions about this race and other Georgia stuff, but I won't be fair and let Catherine and Tim have their shot on this as well.
Sure.
Tim, why don't you go first?
Sure. One thing I noticed, Tom, and I found it really surprising, Governor Deal's popularity is really in the tank. Does it look like he might be in danger of facing an opponent perhaps in his own party in the next election?
I think Deal has pretty decent numbers with Republican voters, about 60% approve, about 20% disapprove. So I think that it would be tough to beat him in a primary, but certainly if Saxby Chambliss and Nathan Deal are the Republican candidates in 2014, I think Democrats have a better chance in the governor's race than they do in the Senate race. Deal, certainly 37% approval rating, not very impressive. We tested him against three of the same Democrats that we tested against Chambliss, and the Democrats did on average 10 points better against Deal than they did against Chambliss. Now, Deal still led all of them, but it was by pretty modest margins, and of course it's a situation where the potential Democratic candidates maybe aren't that well-known statewide yet, whereas Deal certainly as governor for a couple years now I think is pretty universally known. So, you know, that's not necessarily one that I would look at as a top-tier pickup opportunity for Democrats when you compare it to states like Florida and Ohio and Pennsylvania that also have unpopular Republican governors but are also just much more hospitable states for a Democrat to win in. But I think Georgia's one Democrat should keep an eye on. It doesn't look to me like Deal's an absolute cinch for re-election, and it's a situation where maybe one of these up-and-comers you know, could run against him, and maybe you don't beat him this time, but you could position yourself well to do something in the future, especially if the demographic trends in Georgia, you know, sort of make it a little bit more of a state where Democrats can win long-term in sort of the way that we've been seeing in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. And among Georgia Republicans, you had talked to David about secession people who favored that on a national level. And here in Georgia, you have like, what, 44% of Republican voters who favor it and 44%, I believe, who don't favor it. Who are these 44% who favor it? What type of voters are there? Are we talking about the Tea Party people? Or
yeah,
are we talking about?
Absolutely. It's the most conservative element of the Republican Party. It's people who, you know, sort of describe themselves as very conservative. It's the kind of people who think that Saxby Chambliss, who's been a very conservative U.S. senator, is not a conservative enough U.S. senator. So it definitely is a pretty right-wing fringe. But, you know, there's a lot of those folks within the Republican Party, especially in the South.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this fringe a big enough group to swing any primary election in this state?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that if all these people who want to secede from the country vote for the same person against Saxby Chambliss, then Saxby Chambliss' Senate career is going to be over after two terms. So definitely, I mean, I think that it shows that the Republican electorate in Georgia is extremely conservative and that any Georgia politician who's seen as even remotely anything other than hard right, you know, could run into some trouble.
Wow. Well, with that, I'm going to swing. Go ahead, Tom.
I think that could make it easier for Democrats because if you know, Saxby Chambliss is not conservative enough, and they find some candidate to beat him in the primary who's, you know, much farther to the right, then it seems like you have a better opportunity to attract independents and really also get the Democratic base fired up. So
I think that's absolutely right. I think we've seen over the last few elections that any sort of mainstream Republican candidate is going to win statewide in Georgia, and if Democrats are going to have any hope, it would take, you know, a Todd Akin, Richard Murdoch-style kind of totally crazy candidate, and I think that is something that could happen. It's not just a fantasy scenario.
So we should look forward to our wing nuts, I guess.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, this is extremely out of character for me to be asking about this, and I hope David doesn't get annoyed with me for asking about it, but I cannot not ask about the Falcons. You know, I'm not a big sports person, but I have been following this new arena or new stadium discussion, and we talked a little bit about this before the show. We're all quite shocked by these numbers. Do you have any insight into...
Yeah, there's just an incredible resistance right now from voters all over the country, sort of in this economy, to spend any sort of taxpayer money or really any money at all on stuff like new sports stadiums. We here in North Carolina and Wilmington had a proposal to move the Braves' single-A baseball team to Wilmington, and they were going to build a nice ballpark downtown and all that kind of thing. And over 70% of voters opposed that proposal at the ballot box in November, and that's pretty reflective of what we're seeing on these kinds of things across the country right now. And I also think that in the specific case of the Falcons, voters sort of think about the Georgia Dome, look at the Georgia Dome and think, that facility's brand new, you know, barely 20 years old at this point. I think that, you know, there's a lot of sentiment in that case. It's like, well, they just got a new stadium, so why would we need to build another new stadium so quickly? And then beyond that, I think folks also sort of look at an Arthur Blank and say, you know, that guy's loaded. He has all the money in the world, so why can't he just build himself a football stadium? So all that combination of things, I just think there's a lot of resistance right now.
David, do you want to comment on this? Because I know you're a big Falcons fan. And what
and
is
Catherine, I'm not upset that you saved me a little time. I'm a Falcons season ticket holder. I actually used to work for the Falcons in two different capacities. Love the Falcons, not always against public spending, but I'm actually not shocked that this many people are against it. I'm actually shocked that the project seems to be humming along in the face of 75-12 opposition to public funding. I think once these poll numbers get out there, this may derail it, and I'm sure there's going to be more follow-up polls besides yours, but I think you kind of got the ball rolling. I know somebody from the AJC just picked up on it today because they actually knew that you were coming to the show in contact. We had some contact about it. But nevertheless, on this, in that 12% or 15% that think the Falcons need a new stadium, what's the demographic profile of where they live, race, income level of folks that actually support this?
You know, I'll be honest, I didn't look at it closely enough to be able to authoritatively answer that question, but just based on what we've seen with this kind of thing in other places, it's probably mostly men, and it is mostly going to be people who live near Atlanta and may actually be regular attendees of the Falcons game, you know, games. If you live in Savannah or Albany or anywhere well outside of Atlanta, you're really, you know, probably not seeing a whole lot of need for a new Falcon Stadium. But, you know, when you see 12%, that means that even in the Atlanta metro area, there's pretty strong opposition. It's just a signal of the times. It's not a good time for pro sports teams to be wanting to get new stadiums, build new stadiums, that sort of thing. And this is a situation where if voters do have any sort of say on it, it's not going to be too friendly. And, you know, this is obviously a different issue, but we saw with the transit referendum in Metro Atlanta this year that especially if there's a strongly organized opposition, voters just are not very friendly to a lot of sort of
proposals for big new things at a time where they feel like in their own households they're kind of having to cut back.
Yeah, and I tell you, from going into Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, and Tim probably can speak to this too, in 1986 when that stadium was about 20 years old, and going into the Georgia Dome this year when it's about 20 years old, the Georgia Dome has lasted and worn far better than Fulton County Stadium ever thought about doing. It's just no comparison. That's why I think a lot of folks are like, this place is nice. You know, what more could you want? It's so much better than what we had before, what a lot of the colleges have, and everything else. Well, let's go ahead, and I happen to see your Twitter feed, and I know you're starting to work on polls in some other states, and we can't let you go before we ask about Ashley Judd and Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's all done, but it looks like you've done a little bit on the Kentucky Senate race. Where does it stand with Ashley Judd? If she runs, does she have a good shot?
If she runs, she definitely has a very good shot to be the Democratic nominee. That's who Democrats want as their candidate. We sort of asked with a list of Ashley Judd and then a bunch of sort of traditional politicians, who would you most like to see as the Democratic candidate to take on Mitch McConnell in 2014? And Ashley Judd is the winner when you ask that question. The general election, you know, Kentucky is obviously just a tough state for Democrats. Not going to be easy, but I think she'd start out within 10 points of Mitch McConnell. And honestly, in a year where Democrats are not going to have a lot of great pickup opportunities simply because they won all the good pickup opportunities in 2008 that are now coming back up in 2014, I think that's a race where Democrats are going to want to kind of put in some energy, put in some resources, and see if they can at least have one seat where they try to play some offense. And Mitch McConnell is really unpopular. He has very poor approval numbers, but it's a situation where he's unpopular with both Democrats and Republicans. And, of course, those Republicans who aren't going to vote for who don't like McConnell are still going to vote for him in the general election. So he's the kind of guy, sort of like Harry Reid in Nevada in 2010, his leadership counterpart, who might be able to have, say, a minus 10 approval rating and still get reelected, sort of just based on the overall partisan orientation of the state. So that'll kind of be interesting to watch. But I think Ashley Judd is definitely very interested in running, and I think our poll numbers will show her she has a path.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll all be watching Missing this winter and spring, hoping she can find that boy and come home to America and run for the Kentucky Senate seat. Seriously, I guess we would have to watch the ratings on that show, because if the ratings were strong, then she might have a job to not have to, need a different job for. I'm sure she gets parts here and there, but that will seriously be something to watch to see if that show takes off to the point where it's like, oh, this thing could have 4 or 5 years, and you've got to really choose between this or that, as opposed to there's a lull in your career. You can do this and see how it goes, and then do something else. Well, Tom, before I let you go, anything else you think you need to comment on while you're on the Code Divine?
Nope. We'll have new polls out this week from Kentucky, South Carolina, and North Carolina. Kentucky and North Carolina obviously focusing on the 2014 Senate races in those states. And then in South Carolina, we're taking a real close look at who people would like to see appointed to replace Jim DeMint in the Senate. After the first night of that poll, Stephen Colbert and Tim Scott were at the top of voters' lists on who they'd like to see for that appointment. So it'll be interesting to see what the final numbers are on that one. But we'll definitely have three interesting polls in the South coming out this week.
Yeah, well Tim, of course we could have you on the rest of the year every week to talk about these polls that come out, but we're going to resist until 2013. So we wish you a great rest of the year and holidays. And we'll get you on sometime early in 2013.
That sounds great. Merry Christmas, y'all. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, happy holidays. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Thanks
Tom. Again. Yeah, Tom, great again. We didn't even get into the NFL poll, but I the Georgia Dome building and really stadium construction nationwide. I got touched on. We got our football fix in there and all the other Senate races and governor's races and everything else. Tom Jensen of Public Policy Poland. Well, when we stop talking. We had that discussion going about the South Carolina Senate seat, and, of course, Tom gave us more information. Obviously, Tim Scott is who Jim DeMint wants, but there was also another name we didn't mention. There's, you know, some people said that Nikki Haley could just pick herself. She may have a tough time winning re-election for governor. This would give her a Senate seat, which might be, you know, less a desirable, if you will, than the governor's race. But she kind of, you know, struck down that notion. I have a feeling if she picked herself that it would there be a real blowback to that. Don't y'all?
I agree.
Agree?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that probably won't happen. Odds are to be Tim Scott. Now, of course, there's the other thought. Mark Sanford might want to make a comeback. I think there is a Sanford that could make a comeback, and that would be Mrs. Sanford, but I don't think Mark would do well unless there's like a Republican Party of Argentina, and then he might be stellar for that. But it looks like, you know, Tim Scott is going to be the name there, and that'll be interesting to see how that affects his race and Lindsey Graham's race, because they're both going to run at the same time. And because Tim Scott is African-American, he might do a little better among African-Americans. And then would that make Lindsey Graham do a little better with African-Americans? And, of course, how would that affect the race with Tea Partiers? And there's a lot to look at given that both races are there together. Would they try to run as a ticket and use their own individual strengths to help the other one? Or would, you know, Scott, I'm going to Tea Party you.
Well, so I just want a little bit of clarification on this. So is DeMint's term up in 2014?
No.
Okay, so will this election just be for 2 years to finish out the...
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
It'll be for 2 years. That,
their law
is up in 2016.
Yeah, their law says, though, that in the event of something like this happening, that there has to be a general election at the next available general election, which would be 2014.
I see. Okay. And then, so then it'll just be for 2 years. Huh. That's kind of an interesting.
I don't know if it's 2 years.
Yeah, you would serve the remainder of his term. So whoever runs would have to run once and run again. But, you know, if you're a congressman like Joe Wilson or Tim Scott, you're going to have to run twice anyway.
Right,
South Carolina's
trying to understand the process.
Land-wise, media market-wise, I mean, if you're already running in, say, the Columbia market or the Charleston market, you're only going to have to add another market to one or just to those. So it's not – and the money would probably come, I have a feeling, for instance – either Joe Wilson or Tim Scott would be darlings of the right wing as far as raising money. Wilson, of course, because he, you know, had the courage to tell the president he lied on the floor of the House, no matter how tacky we think that is.
Oh, was that courage?
He could raise money off of that.
That was courage?
Well, that's what they think. We don't call it courage. They would. But then, of course, Tim Scott is a chance for them to say, look, we're not racist. We support Tim Scott. Which I will say this, I have a lot more respect for Tim Scott than I do Herman Cain and Alan West. Alan West, a little bit on the crazy side. Herman Cain, like I said earlier, I don't think is that bright. But I think Tim Scott doesn't have those two flaws, so I have a respect for him. So if someone's going to win, I don't agree with ideologically, Tim Scott would be somebody I could stomach, I guess, in that consideration.
Well, look, here it is, I think, in a nutshell. If she appoints anyone other than Tim Scott, then I believe she would be appointing a caretaker to hold on to that position until she herself could run in 2 years. Would you agree with that?
That's something she could get. But, of course, there could be some blowback in her own election. And if she loses in her own gubernatorial election, likely in the primary, from a blowback, then she's done for the next race. So I don't know where that gets her. I guess she could do some jujitsu, appoint, say, a Tim Scott, and then decide she wants to run against Lindsey Graham from the right. That might be a way she could get into the Senate, but not be seen as, you know, showing herself favoritism. Because you remember Murkowski in Alaska, the father appointed his daughter, and he got a lot of blowback for that. Appointing yourself, that seems like that's, you know, times 10 on that same dynamic. Well, let's kind of go back real quickly to another thing we were talking about, and that was Ashley Judd. In the same time she said, hey, look, I'm really looking at the Senate thing, her own grandmother said that Mitch McConnell's doing a great job and she shouldn't run and she's just a Hollywood liberal. By the way, she resides in Tennessee. I didn't know there was a Hollywood, Tennessee. I've heard of the Florida one. I heard of the California one, of course. But anyway, just a Hollywood liberal. I was absolutely floored. I never knew grandmothers said anything bad about their grandkids. I really think that this backstory be one of the most interesting things we'll hear in the next year or two if we get to hear it. Were y'all kind of shocked by that, Tim?
Yeah, a little bit. With the electorate at large up there, something like that might could even stick too. Now, I mean, I've heard of mother-in-laws like Terry Truman's mother-in-law in 1948 said, "I don't know why anybody would vote against that nice man, Mr. Dewey."
but she was in the White House too,
by the way, I might add, at the time. So yeah, I'd have,
they made trailers back then. I might have moved her in a trailer back on the back lawn.
Bass would have moved him in a trailer too, but that's another story. So I don't know if it's a good idea for her to run or not. Now I know what Tom said about the polling and all. And I can see why the National Party would like it. She's got name recognition, and I'm sure her getting money would be no problem, which means that's one less race they'd have to worry about funding. And she's just a named candidate ready to go. But I don't know about that.
Well, you know, she does have a graduate degree from Harvard, from Kennedy School. And, you know, she has been involved in a lot of, policy kind of issues. She's working with the First Lady on Let's Move. She's been a United Nations, one of these United Nations ambassadors to, hunger or something. So it's not that unusual. I mean, she does sort of have the preparation. And money should be no problem since she's married to a Formula One driver, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Formula
I guess
One?
They make money.
Is it Formula One?
Yeah, I think that's right. I didn't know that until recently, I guess, as part of this. Well, and I'll tell you my view on people being from Hollywood or sports or wherever, they might be famous outside of politics. That shouldn't qualify you or disqualify you.
Right, that's what I think.
It helps to say, oh, I've heard of you. I mean, it's worth name ID in spades, but then you have to then when you people say, oh, that person, then you have to show up. And it sounds like she has some qualities to certainly make her somebody to look at, particularly in a tough seat that's not just this instantly winnable seat. If she came and got prepared, make a race of it. And obviously the Democratic Party would love to do this to Mitch McConnell, who's been a thorn in the side, it seems like, ever since I started following politics, the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Well, let's continue to cover our quitters here. In the Georgia State Senate, Chip Rogers, who was just one of the top senators in the Republican caucus, he quit. And then John Bullock from more of the rural areas quit. And I've heard that somehow this may be looking at a rural suburban divide within the Republican Party. But I guess going to the bigger issue, these two guys just ran an election. It seems like they could have said, look, I want to quit before now, and they can go ahead and hold election on election day. People can run instead of costing the taxpayers how many ever dollars it's going to be to hold these two special elections in January and then have their guys or ladies behind in this process. Do you think these people should, quit within just a few weeks of the election, Catherine?
No. I mean, I'm glad Chip Rogers quit, but I agree with you. You know, how can you be so indecisive that you decide, you know, 3 weeks after you've been elected that you don't want to be elected anymore, that you don't want to serve? I think it's disrespectful to the it's disrespectful on a whole number of levels. All the people that supported him and donated to his campaign and voted for him, but also, like you said, the taxpayers who have to pay for now a special election in his district and the other one too. I think it shows some kind of character flaw.
Yeah, Tim.
Well, let's deal with Senator Bullitt first. You know, Charlie, our friend Charlie, wrote on Peach Pundit about the senator's health. It is very possible that might have taken a nosedive. That might explain him. I'm not saying that it does, but that's the only thing I'm hearing right now out there about him. Now, Chip Rogers is another story. You know, you hear rumors, and I don't know. There might be something personal. I don't know that. But I do know one thing that is different from election night is the fact that he has since found out that he's not going to have his little majority leader's name tag to wear anymore. He just might got mad enough about it that he just decided to quit. Now, I'm not saying that's the reason, but it certainly looks funny to me that a week ago he was fine, and then all of a sudden he gets booted from his job by his caucus, and the next thing you know, he's out. Just saying, right, David?
Yeah, I think that's a huge point in all this, and I think we'll, you know, discuss this more. Probably have a Republican from, say, Peach Funding, or certainly the Georgia side, Republican side of things, to maybe discuss this in the future, since they can also tell us about the races to replace these two senators.
Well, let me ask you a question. What does this do to their supermajority?
I guess if they were to lose these races, and there's probably not much chance, certainly the Chip Rogers district, and I think the John Bullock district's a little more winnable for Democrats. I guess if they were to lose both of them, it'd be in peril. If they were to split them, I don't know what their margin is, if it's, you know, they have exactly enough votes. So, you know, it'd be something to watch. But obviously, it's going to take more than just these two races to really have enough Democrats in the state Senate to make a big impact. Well, in our last, like, 3 to 4 minutes, it's time to get Buck Wild Virginia style. And normally we wouldn't talk about reality TV so much. I don't think we've ever talked about the Jersey Shore on the, you know, 5+ years we've been on the air and the 3 or 4 years they've been on the air. But Buck Wild from West Virginia is replacing it. And apparently show about maybe slightly post high school, you know, college age, but I don't think these folks go to college. They're these young residents of West Virginia that just love to party. And apparently they're not the best face of West Virginia, according to Senator Joe Manchin. And he wants MTV to just cancel production on this show. Now, my quick thought on this is probably you could go to every single one of the 50 states, round you up about a dozen, you know, people between the age of 18 and 25 that love to party more than they think about their future, that would be entertaining to watch. You wouldn't want them to be your kids necessarily, but they'd be entertaining to watch. And it's every state's got them. So I think Joe Manchin doesn't need to get his feathers too ruffled that anybody's going to have a lesser opinion of West Virginia. Catherine, I'm sure you've already got the pre-tapes on this.
Oh, right, yeah, because that's my kind of reality show. Well, I just think that it's, you know, doesn't the guy have anything better to do than talk about this? I mean, is it really his responsibility to tell MTV about their programming? I mean, if people don't watch it, they won't play it. people are watching it. People want to watch it.
Well, it's coming apparently. Out in January, I think.
No, it's already been
yeah,
on.
But I think you're right. It's freedom of speech. If they want to, if these people want to be on this show and MTV to show it, and it doesn't violate FCC rules, you know, they fuzz out what they got to fuzz out, and they got to bleep out what they got to bleep out, it can be on. Tim, what do you make of it? And Joe Mankins.
Well, let me throw this out there too. It's all being filmed on location, of course, in Charleston and one other town. I forget which one. But you know that we're talking about a big film crew coming there, doing all of this, spending some money in that state.
That's
a
good point.
What could be so wrong with that?
I'm sure Dollar General's not against it, Tim.
Yeah.
You know, I mean that'll infuse tens of dollars into the local Dollar General.
I mean something like that over the course of a year could put hundreds of thousands of dollars into a local economy.
Hey, who knows? Some may see what they're doing and think that looks fun. I'm taking a redneck vacation to West Virginia.
I'm just talking about the production crew itself is going to sink that kind of money in there.
People hurt them as far
you know,
as that goes.
They're going to hire local people to work on it, you know, all of that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's in all seriousness, there are probably, it could somehow help their film production. I'm sure there's other movies or television shows they'd rather pick between, but sometimes you can get. My favorite thing would be if I was a U.S. senator and every time now Joe Manchin got angry about something, I'd say, uh-oh, Joe's going buck wild. You know, the way he's gone to this. I mean, I would just use that over and over, just, you know, just to needle him and fun. You know, I don't know. Maybe the guy has no sense of humor, and I wouldn't do that. I don't know him, but that'd be the first place I'd go. Well, again, I want to thank Tom Jensen for coming on the Kudzu Vine. Thanks to Tim and Catherine for a great show on December 9th, 2012. Good evening.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.